This is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here with Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad, Chris. I tell you a funny thing. I got trolled by Google Maps. Google Maps do this annual summary of where you've been.
Oh, right.
And I haven't been anywhere, so it just drew a map around my house, basically, or into the local park and just about there. And now it started telling me, oh, your daily commute, if you start now, will take 40 minutes. No, it won't. It will take me up 30 seconds as I leave the bedroom into my office. So I think it's now decided it's going to troll me from now on.
Do you think it thinks that you're walking around where you lived, going for a walk in the morning, and that's your actual commute?
No, because it knows where I work, because it tells me where I was. It says, if you leave now, the traffic wouldn't be like this, and it will take you this long, and it will show me where I'm going. I've been there about 4 times in the past 10 months, so I really don't think it's been particularly fair.
Strange. I blame the people who write the software, and I blame the people who manage the infrastructure. You know, CIOs, CTOs, you just can't trust them. And maybe we should talk to one today and find out how this sort of thing works. And in fact, actually, that's who we are going to talk to today. This week, we're going to talk to Kathy Southwick from Pure Storage. Hi, Kathy. How are you?
I'm great. Good to see you, Chris.
Good to see you, too. So what's going on at Google then with all these maps? But I guess you can't answer that. I don't know whether Pure Storage are a customer, but I guess it's a good indication of the sort of challenges that, you know, technologists have when things like COVID changes, and we'll get into that in a second, but perhaps I should let you just introduce yourself to the audience and, you know, give us a bit of background about yourselves and yourself and tell us what you do at Pure.
Great. Yeah, so I'm the CIO for Pure and have been here just a little bit over 2 years now, and actually came into the business in a unique role in that I had been a very large customer of Pure in the past. And so was able to bring the, what is it like from the customer side into, you know, the product side of a company. But as CIO, we have been very focused on kind of really the things you would expect us, enabling our business, trying to make sure we're taking care of our employees. And with COVID, as you've probably heard, there's been lots of challenges as, you know, all companies went through various, efforts. But I'm really excited to be here and hope to have a great conversation today.
Great. Well, why don't we dive in and talk about, you know, the last 12 months, because it has been challenging for everybody, clearly challenging for Google and their map technology, unless they just wanted to wind you up, Martin, of course. It's been challenging for everybody. Martin and I touched on this 12 months ago, probably very early on when we didn't really see where this was all going to head, and probably were a bit naive about the impact that coronavirus and COVID would have over that time. From a high-level perspective, what have you seen in terms of how customers have reacted to the changing setup and the pandemic? And how has that sort of initially affected your relationship with them?
Yeah, you know, I think that customers have probably, you know, surprised themselves. Some of them went through the efforts where a lot of their planning that they had been doing with their employees and what they were doing to just prepare their company for how their products or their services were, you know, consumed. They had a pretty good handle on that. I think what most companies went through, the customers we saw, was the surges of having everybody remote at the exact same time. Most companies have had variants of variations of employees being remote, but when you have all of your employees remote and then all of your services needing to be handled differently, you have to kind of rethink or reevaluate what you're doing. So, you know, we saw from our customers was an absolute reliance on Pure to be able to hit, you know, every commitment. So that meant we had to make sure our supply chain was really resilient because we're shipping products to customers. And they would expect the same thing, you know, because they can't have their employees in, that we need to do everything remote. So remote installation, huge focus. So customers who were dealing with all of that internally, on how they were managing their own, they were also now requiring that from their suppliers to be able to have strong supply chains, you know, be able to do everything remote and really make sure that they had tight relationships with not just their account teams, but the executives to say, you know, are we okay? Are we going to see any disruptions to our business? They needed that assurance from their suppliers on that they could meet the needs of what they were dealing with within their own companies. And we certainly saw that firsthand at Pure.
Okay. I mean, Martin, I remember one of the early things you talked about was the whole remote working thing, because, you know, that was something that you as a company scaled up quite significantly in the early days, didn't you?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it went from a few people flexible working, like myself, what I've worked, been worked Mondays and Fridays at home for quite some time, to everybody. And it was pretty much overnight. And I imagine you're probably like everybody in the industry. Suddenly everybody's using VPNs and you're worried about your VPN capacity. There's a lot of people who've never really thought they could work remotely. So, and it suddenly it turns out that there's a lot of people who can work remotely. Call centers going 50% remote. Most call centers send everybody home, but you would have half your people at home. And for a long time, I mean, I think that's been a wish for a lot of people for a long time, but nobody thought you could really do it. Turns out that you can. All these things which have enabled our entertainment, how we stream entertainment, things, all this infrastructure is there, which allows us to work pretty well remotely from that point of view. I mean, it's the end points, I mean, getting people with devices and all the stuff around that, which I think has been a challenge for everybody. I thought it was interesting where you're talking about remote installation and engineers. So how have you found customers with that? Because I know from as I work for an end user, a customer, we've have put very stringent requirements on the engineers that we use, for instance. But they have to make sure they're masked. They have to come through the temperature tests. As from our regular site engineers now, we have on-site testing, so we can test for them. Have you found customers in general doing that?
Absolutely. You know, so we implemented those same processes for our own internal engineers and how we were doing work. And because we do have people who do, there are essential workers who do need to still come into the buildings, who still need to touch equipment. And so we had to put all those protocols in place. And what we found is that most customers, were very good in the beginning of, and so probably still to this day, when things were still very fluid, we would share back and forth. Here's all the protocols we're using. Here's the process we're using. And I think customers were really great about kind of engaging those companies who are helping them to be successful to say, hey, let's share in how we do this. We'll tell you what we need from you ahead of time. And I think that the transparency between customer and, you know, those of us who had to go out to those customer sites was unbelievable. And, it needed to be like that in order for us to all keep our businesses running. Mm-hmm. So that's what we saw.
I guess from my experience, the only thing I can say that I've seen is I still run a small lab environment. I run it in a colo. So if I have equipment that comes in, I evaluate. I have to get it shipped directly and then they install it locally. So there's effectively some sort of remote hands capability.
Yep.
Now, I've had two storage arrays shipped as well as a number of physical servers shipped and had to have them racked, powered on, and then configured remotely. Now, the interesting thing is that one worked really well, one worked not so well, and I'm not going to say which vendor didn't work so well. But what it showed is that if vendors have spent a lot of time thinking about the process, it is actually very easy to rack something, put it into a network connection, power it on, and as long as it can just pick up an IP address, pretty much you're off and running and the rest can be done, you know, over a remote connection. And I do think that has got to have been something that vendors, especially yourself, would have been focused on if you weren't already doing that already, to make that even slicker for customers who just couldn't have people coming on site.
You're 100% right. I mean, Pure Storage has been very focused on that for a long time. We also, within IT, the same thing. We needed to, because if you have all your users also remote and some not maybe as technical as others, you need to be able to get them whatever they need, whatever laptop or equipment, peripherals, et cetera. And it needs to be somewhat, you know, self-install, remote installation, that they're not having to, you know, try to figure things out. Because your whole thing is, you're just like for a customer and just like for an employee, you're trying to figure out how to help them be as productive and not disrupting what they're trying to do to solve their business problem. So whatever it is that from a customer side or even the employee, what they're working on. So we have spent a lot of time on that, the logistics, how you use your different providers on getting, you know, equipment, whether it's for employees or it's for our customers. So I think there's a lot of, can't understate how much work it is to actually do the simplified process, you know, with your providers, you know, logistics supply chain.
Yeah. So let's move on and tackle a slightly different subject. And that's the whole idea of what we expected businesses to do when they suddenly saw that there was a potential significant disruption to their own business. And by that, I mean, for instance, there might have been companies that suddenly had a great demand in additional business to deliver because they may have been an internet business, an online business already. But there may have been others who had a massive amount of uncertainty about where their business was headed and therefore might have wanted to look at things like different financial terms, or maybe they didn't want to buy some equipment at this point. Maybe they did want to buy some equipment at this point. I'm interested to try and get an idea of understanding, you know, what you felt when you were talking to customers, and how that, you know, what they were saying back to you about how they wanted to change their engagement with you as a company.
I think the initial was very much, I'll call it, you know, traditional way of calling and saying, you know, to their account person saying, hey, I need something right now. And because they were feeling disruption within their business. So I would say the initial, that first quarter was a lot about recovery. It was about capacity. It was about just being able to, I want to call it, you know, almost survival mode for all of us, as like everything changed at once. So it was a matter of getting everything so that we could then move to the next stage, which then started to say, okay, so are we going to keep the same programs in place? Do we need to reprioritize? Do we, you know, do we want to focus harder on the digital transformation, which is talked about a lot? And most companies had that in place, some kind of digital transformation program, and not just us, but our customers as well. And so it's a matter of, you know, what's the right priority, and do you accelerate any of that? So that was kind of the focus for, you know, of what we saw and, you know, what we started to, you know, work with our customers on.
So customers that already had, say, you know, transformation projects in place, do you feel like they just let them run, or do you think they decided that they should be on hold, or did it change the dynamics of that at all?
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a great question, because I think that what we saw is, and I actually we did a survey out to several of our of my CIO peers and customers, and what we saw was that the majority of them all had transformation programs in place. And the majority being, you know, well over, you know, into the 60%+. There was a lot of the ones that responded, 60% of them said we had to accelerate our digital transformation. So they already had the program in place. They were already working on initiatives, but now it was even more important because their customers were also, you know, dealing with the same issues. So you weren't going to be able to have someone come to your office, come do something with you. So even if we could do everything remote, maybe the customer couldn't do that. And so on that side of the equation, the customers had to also rethink some of what they're doing. So it's really been a big shift or a focus on, or at least the feedback we had through our survey was that, you know, 61% said, I need to go accelerate my digital transformation program. I got a program in place. I need to keep pushing it harder now.
Martin, I mean, that it's interesting, isn't it? We've talked a little bit about this over the last 12 months about whether we thought people would put things on hold, whether they would be cautious and wait. And it sounds like that isn't the case.
I think it's actually a very mixed bag. I think you'll find that. I think digital transformation programs, I think they've accelerated, but you talk to all C-levels or anyone in business, they'll turn around and say, we've probably done in 10 months what would have taken us 4 or 5 years. We've just accelerated it. And it's been probably almost the best way of doing it, because you suddenly realise you can do it. So those programs have really forged ahead. If you've had more traditional refresh projects, of things which you don't have to do, you don't have to do this year. You're going to have to do them in the next couple of years, but you don't have to do now. Some of those have gone on a back burner. You're making do with some of that stuff, because you've got enough to focus on bringing the digital transformation, maybe new ways of delivering to your customers. So the business which is ticking along, let it tick along. Now forge ahead. And I mean, you may find yourself in 18 months' time that refresh program, which you thought you had to do, you don't have to do, because you completely transformed your business. It's encouraged lots of people to think in completely new and different ways.
And so that's, I think, an interesting aspect, Kathy. And I think that might be worth just digging into in a bit more detail as to where people then decide, if people in companies decided to put their investment into different places, because, you know, an obvious one perhaps might be that you might end up doing, say, more automation or, you know, something like that, simply because you didn't have the people on site. So not having people physically in an office, you want to automate more, create more dashboards, so you've got more information. So in your survey, what did you find out about, you know, spending habits?
Yeah, you know, this and I can tell you it was interesting, because getting the results back, what we saw was that exactly what Martin was saying, that you have to start looking at your entire portfolio of work that's going on. And you're going to make choices about, it's not that budgets went away, it's just that you're reprioritizing to focus on the areas. So the top five areas that came back, which no surprise, you know, automation, customer experience, security, you know, analytics, and then obviously work, I'll call it workspace or collaboration, you know, kind of tools. And that was like dead on for us, that those were kind of the five that we've been looking at. So it's not that you weren't doing those things before, but they just became higher priority. And so the things like what Martin was describing that you say, oh, I could probably get another year out of this platform and work on these other areas focus. And for us, because I'll give you an example, we had so much of an in-person culture that everybody came to the office. So you did your whiteboarding, you did all of your, you know, brainstorming, you did everything, you know, on drawings. And, you know, product engineers are very good about, you know, they go get into a room and you're going to do a you know, discussion and whiteboard everything. Now all of a sudden everyone's remote. So we literally have had our collaboration tools as one of our priorities. We had deprioritized it going into last year. And then obviously COVID hit. And we now shifted that. So wait, it's like, we now needs to come back up higher. So we saw that across the board that that was the big shift for all the companies, was not a complete revamp of everything and not budget cuts, but it was literally that you were going to focus on things that were more applicable to what it looks like for all of us right now.
Mm, I guess that does make sense, Martin, that, you know, you're restructuring your thinking rather than necessarily stopping stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's changed everybody's priorities. And it's been interesting just watching businesses, the business I work for, but across all the industries, how people have changed their priorities, what they want to focus on, what they want to focus on the investment. I think it's been quite nice as an employee to realise that companies are starting to realise that their employees are really, really important and they need to keep them happy.
Yeah, you know, Martin, that was one of the areas that was really interesting when we got feedback. It was the hyper focus on employee, not like morale, but just their well-being, the how are they doing? Are we doing enough things, the right things for employees? And so I look at that as really great that, you know, our company was doing that for our employees, but having that as the result also from the CIOs who responded on the survey, same message was, we're concerned about our employee well-being. So it was actually a really good thing, I think, to see that acknowledgement and focus on, you know, employees being centered, all of us.
I think it is important because it's very easy to think that your technology, your equipment, your systems, your software are somehow more valuable than the people. And in fact, none of this works without the people being there, whether they're physically in the office or whether they're remote. You know, you need people in both scenarios. So it's interesting it's very positive to hear that there's that level of feedback. I would ask you, Martin, whether the fact that more people would potentially be at home watching TV or more material needed to be made available, whether that has a material effect on the amount of storage you've been buying?
I don't think that's not had a material effect on the amount of storage we've been buying. I would say it's new technologies are going to have much more of a material effect on the amount of storage we buy and use. But certainly there has been a much more rapid rollout of other content. It may not necessarily have impacted what we keep on premises or in the cloud, but yeah, there has been a much more rapid rollout of that. And you can see the proliferation of streaming services launched full stop.
Yeah, true. Speaking of cloud, I mean, I guess a lot of people probably assumed that one of the things that people would do was leap to the cloud. Martin and I talked about this a little bit earlier, towards the end of last year, just thinking that, bearing in mind the cloud is theoretically already there, physically there, all you've got to do is consume it. But I'm not sure whether, first of all, that's a very wise move to start using a technology you're not familiar with, but also at the same time, whether that really actually would give you more as much value as it would be if you could just get more equipment shipped into your existing data center. So what did you find from people's sort of views on the cloud?
Most what we saw is that the number we had was it's just under 70%. The reason they went to cloud was not because they had done like full economics or technology evaluations, anything. It was for scale and speed. So they hadn't done any of what I'd call that due diligence that many companies often do, technologists do, to kind of balance the whole equation. And so when we saw that result back from the CIOs that we surveyed, you know, what that really showed you is one, they need something that's, you know, that was fast to scale. And that gave them the initial what they needed. What we're seeing now, I'll say post-survey and the information coming back from customers, and I would say even in the conversations I have with the CIOs all around Silicon Valley, is that there's a lot of reassessment going on. You know, do I bring workloads back? Do I augment my existing data centers if I have them, or colo space, et cetera? Or do I keep it on the cloud and keep moving it forward? So I think that's why there's been so much power behind hybrid cloud solutions. It's probably not a one size fits all. And so I think that we'll see that continual evolution of you got to make your choices. And we did this in my last company on looking at what workloads make sense to run in the cloud versus those that made better sense to run within our data centers. And I think that's the constant evaluation, those decision trees that kind of flush out and figure out what should run there, has the right economics, the right kind of scale, security, et cetera, versus those things that might be somewhat strategic, or you might have a different security profile that you want to have on-prem. And so the ability to do both. So from our lens as a company, what we saw, so that's kind of from the customer side of it. Mm-hmm. From our lens from the company, what we've seen is that continual question from the customers. And I think that's, again, why there's been so much focus on hybrid. And we've actually worked our products to be able to do that as well, so that you are on-prem, off-prem, and that you have those choices. Because I think the path going forward is all going to be about choice for the customer and what that looks like. Do I want CapEx? Do I want OpEx models? Do I want, you know, a different kind of consumption model? Do I pull it all on-prem? And it will be different for different customers based on their workload, you know, profiles. And so as a company, we're trying to understand from our customers, what are you looking for? What is it that you need? And we have, as you know, we have kind of tailored products to be able to do that so that you can traverse both an on-prem, off-prem, or even a, you know, a multi-cloud solution. Looks very different than how companies today had to do some quick decisions to be able to support their business. And those were the right decisions at that moment, but they're going to have to look at it and say, is that still the right decision long-term?
I think that's definitely going to be probably one of the most interesting things of 2021 going forward. And it's just that, what do we do next type scenario. You know, maybe the last 12 months was about stability, pushing things on, changing priorities. But now people will be getting to the point of sitting back and thinking, what do we do next? And I don't know, it's interesting to think where we are going to go next. I don't know what your opinion, Martin, is. You know, are you thinking that's what, is that your view and the way you've seen people in the industry going?
I was going to say, it was a good question, Chris. Mm-hmm. But the first thing I would say, if anybody wants any career advice for the next 12 to 24, maybe 3 years, move into FinOps, financial operations for cloud, because there's a lot of people who've now rushed into cloud, and in about 12 months' time, they're going to start looking up those bills and think, oh, where am I spending money? How do I do this better? I think there's a lot. The other thing is, we've spoken about hybrid for many years now, and I think at last we've really begun to see that hybrid is a viable solution. It's something which we're going to do. We will move workloads and we'll have proper discussions. It's not going to be all in cloud. It's not going to be all in on-premises. I think what we might see quite a lot of another washing trend, Chris. Well, I think we're going to see a lot of edge washing, where people are claiming that this is an edge solution when it's actually really an on-premises solution. But nobody wants to. There will be some people who don't want to buy an on-premises solution. So the vendors will, unfortunately, will decide to call it edge. But yeah, I think hybrid and multi-cloud, and then there's going to be a lot of discussion how you map multi-cloud work. Multi-cloud has a number of weaknesses. If you just use your cloud provider as a generic cloud, you may not get the full value out of your cloud provider. So if you don't use the tools they give you and you just use it as infrastructure service, or maybe it's a Kubernetes type service, you may be missing out on a whole load of other services. I mean, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, there are other cloud providers available, but they all have some really good services which are much more integrated into how you would operate. They're not there to provide infrastructure as a service.
Mm. So I think, Cathy, I mean, just going back to that whole discussion, I think, as you said, you know, people have moved very quickly into using the cloud because it's there and it scales. Financially, people are now going to be looking at going either, oh dear, look what we've spent, or, oh, okay, this could be okay, this could be quite reasonable. Or maybe they're looking at the way that they're being charged by their vendor for what they're doing on premises, and they think, well, this is not a great way to be working, to have to find this cash every, you know, 3 years and rip and replace. And I wonder whether it'll drive things like your as a service models a lot quicker than it has been up until now.
Yeah, I would certainly tell you that the demand from customers, the number of questions, and I do a fair amount of conversations directly with our customers who are having those same questions. The Pure as a Service is a great option for those who, whether you are all on-prem or you are in the cloud or you are somewhere in between, because it's a consumption model that gives you all the choice. And I think that at the right price point, so that you are not paying a premium one direction or another. So that's a huge choice option for customers. And as they're making their kind of pivots and trying to decide, where do I go? Do I do a, you know, all cloud solution or not? It allows them to kind of manage that journey and how they want to manage their storage. So from my perspective, I think, you know, Pure is in a perfect position with our customers to be able to help them with that journey, whether it's, you know, data mobility, it's that I want to be all on-prem or in the cloud. There's so many more options that that you have, you know, in using our technology. And I think that that's one of the areas that, you know, customers like you were describing, Martin, the FinOps, I'll have to use that term now. But FinOps is, it's absolutely, because not every workload can run as efficient, and not just from the economics, but also from the performance of what the application needs to do. I saw this in my, you know, my last company that as, you know, we did experiments, you know, you have applications that might have been running within a data center for, you know, many years, and its performance characteristics, moving it to a cloud, and then the data required and the location of that data and how it needs to be closer. I mean, those things all become really important. So there's a lot more that goes into it. And I think it's going to be the reason why I think Pure will do really well with our Pure as a Service, because it's kind of giving that next step for customers to, as they're going on their own journey for, you know, whether it's cloud on-prem or, you know, off-prem, et cetera.
So how do you think you have to change your business then in terms of the offerings you give to customers? I mean, up until you're probably a recent cloud offering, everything's been a very much a physical appliance on premises. You built out the different scenarios for that, so, you know, block, file, and so on. How do you think that's going to change going forward? Now, I'm not trying to set you up here for let's talk about Portworx, because that seems the most obvious one, but that obviously was a purchase you made with a very clear strategy to go towards a more data focused environment where you're not sitting on a specific piece of hardware. So I'm not asking you to betray any confidences or telling me anything we shouldn't know, but I'm very interested to understand what the company's strategy might be going forward in terms of how that will evolve.
This has been said over many times in the industry, but, you know, data is the next oil, you know, that's, you know, exists. And I believe that. And so I think that Pure's focus is on the data, not necessarily the appliance or the, you know, the actual device itself, but it's really about data and data mobility and being, and then I should, you know, of course, without, you know, probably without going, without saying it, but securing your data mobility and what that looks like. So for everybody, as, you know, as I was mentioning on that survey, we had all these analytics being one of the top ones, security being another one of them, automation, all those things can't exist if you don't have data in the right place and in the right usable form. And so I think for Pure, we will stay very centered on what does data mobility look like? And you're right, Portworx is part of that. I mean, that's the whole premise around it. It's about being able to do an abstraction, you know, as an example with Kubernetes, and then being able to, you know, manage your data. So this really is kind of the crown jewel of where I think customers are, and then where Pure is, of being able to help them manage their data wherever they think it needs to exist. So our strategy is quite simple. It's where the customers need to go, and how do they want to do that, and make sure that we have the right products and technology that helps to support that for them as they go on their journey forward.
Martin, maybe we should have gone and registered puredata.com as a URL in case the company decides to change their name at some point and stop being Pure Storage. But I think that is the point, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, it's about data, and it's about that ability to use that data effectively, whether you choose to put it in the cloud. And maybe in the last 12 months, especially the conversations we've had with other vendors, that whole focus on data, not necessarily hardware, has become more and more apparent.
It has. There was one vendor, one of our favourite vendors, Chris, who probably had the perfect motto at one point for this, where information lives.
Oh, yeah. Who were they?
Yeah. Don't exist anymore. But yeah.
No.
But I think it really sums up what companies, what the storage companies need to be. I mean, that's the perfect, this perfect tagline for any storage company. It's where information lives. So information, data, well, data's not information, but you get information right from data. But it is, that's data is your new oil. What you're trying to do, you're trying to extract the information from it. You're trying to know more. That's where we are. And I think all the storage companies are going to be pivoting, looking at how we deal with this. And it goes back to conversations we've had over the past 12 months with things like a conversation we have with NVIDIA about their smart NICs and doing analytics on the data as it comes through. It's where we are now.
Yeah. So, Kathy, then, as we wrap up, you know, what can we take from the information you found in the survey? What can we think about how things are going to go forward? What can we look forward to going forward? And what should, you know, leave people to think about as we wrap up?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the kind of the over, the, you know, the soundbite for the overall survey was that I think CIOs are very optimistic about the future. They're, I'll call it hyper-focused on trying to get ahead of the curve or continue to stay ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. And you saw, we saw that based on the results of, you know, digital transformation is not a new concept, but it's a matter of reprioritizing and then keeping it at the front and center. It was about that, you know, our budgets aren't going away. You know, everyone's, you know, we've gone through these iterations where IT is going to have all their budgets, you know, smashed or decreased. And the reality is that businesses are more reliant on the technology that enables their business. And you can't have the right data and the analytics and the security and all those things in the future without having the investments in your IT or, you know, your business information organization. So I think that we saw that complete trend across all the questions and the feedback that, you know, focus on the future, focus on getting ahead, focus on the enablement. So if you want to do those things with automation, you got to have data. And so there's still that focus on how do I make sure I have data in the right place, you know, for the use cases that I'm trying to solve for my business. And that we're, you know, that all of them now recognize that cloud is part of the future, but it's a, probably it looks different than how everyone was like, it's not an either or, it's a, what does it look like inclusive as we go forward? And that was a consistent theme throughout the survey as well.
Perfect. So the survey, is it available online for people to get hold of?
It is.
You don't have to remember the URL, but if you have it and you can point people at it, that would be useful.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but we did post, I did a LinkedIn profile post that had the whole survey and kind of our observations and analysis of it as well.
Perfect. I know some people who can give it to me, so I'll have a word with them after this and I'll make sure we post it okay. In our show notes so we get that link to it. But any final thoughts, Martin?
Yeah, and I think it's a conversation worth continuing. I think 2020 has been a really interesting year for a lot of people. It's been the year where CIOs have been allowed to make mistakes because you're trying to do so things so quickly, you may make some mistakes. In the past, every time you've tried to change your technology, you've spent 2 years looking at it, thinking about it. You haven't had the chance to do this. It's been an inflection point. I think we will look back at 2020, probably in 22, let's get 21 out of the way and think, you know what, from the technology point of view, it really changed things and it was actually really good for us.
Great. Okay, well, Kathy, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And maybe we'll come back in 2022 and, you know, reflect again on what happened over the next 12 months.
Great. Thanks for having me both. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.